I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Emily about the fallacy that is the advice to find your passion. This B-side is where I take one element of the A-side, and that is the conversation from last episode, and expand on it a little bit and share what you might expect from therapy in relation to that issue, or at least one aspect of what you might expect from therapy. Here is a reminder that this is not intended to be therapy, nor is it intended to be a substitute for therapy. It is for entertainment and interest purposes only. And a specific warning for this episode, because it does include some comments about abuse and trauma. Okay, so the thing I'm going to pick up on from last episode is the feeling of being stuck or unable to execute agency over your own life. I want to focus primarily on why we have that kind of disconnect from ourselves. So maybe you want to change how things are with work, with relationships, with your family, but you don't know how. And you've chosen a therapist, maybe rather than a coach, because you're more curious about that emotional landscape of your stuckness. Or maybe there's also some sadness or some anxiety with your stuckness. And while Emily and I talked briefly about how coaches often look to the future to try and work with hopes and aspirations to make changes for the future, they might take a glance at your past to explore maybe where the stuckness began and what got in the way of your kind of journey. But this glance backwards is often cursory. At least Emily says so, and at least one other coach I know has said the same thing. Emily tells us that a coach might want to notice and acknowledge the past, but not necessarily take a deep dive into it. By contrast, in therapy, I would be listening to what you say about your current situation with a very definite view to looking back. I'd be wanting to identify big emotions as well, and I'd be listening for some of the central big feelings which are driving or impeding you. And they could be things like anger or joy, sadness, fear. And sometimes the clues that people reveal, especially in the early stages of therapy, are obvious and big, and sometimes I might need to look for tiny little clues, and they're less obvious and a lot smaller, as to what your feelings are or what your relationship to those feelings is. Because it's not just how we feel that counts. What's also hugely important is what we think about how we feel. So where we might feel frightened to apply for a course, but because we don't instantly know why we're frightened, we might then berate ourselves for our hesitation. So the therapist would be looking to explore that fear in more detail. I suppose it's where the cliche comes from. You know, how do you feel about that? Is it perhaps comes from the notion of trying to get hold of that part of a person's psyche, which is the kind of critical, the judgmental part, the part that oversees our behaviours, our thoughts and our feelings and judges them. That's an important part of therapy, at least therapy with me. So for the purposes of this episode, I want to talk about one thing specifically. I always like to pick one element and try and delve into that in a little bit more detail. But in this case particularly, there are so many ways that this B-side could have gone. So this episode, as always, is just a flavour of what you might expect from a therapeutic journey to help with feelings of stuckness. And I recommend that you also listen to the B-side of the Four Burners Theory too, when that comes out, because that in that episode I pick a different and slightly deeper angle to explore that relates quite a lot to this episode as well. Okay, so if we're stuck in a job or with a group of friends or in a relationship, there could be a multitude of things at play, emotionally speaking. And here's just a handful of them. And I'm going to pick one to talk about in more detail. So here are four things that might be at play. We might feel stuck because we've stopped being able to trust ourselves and our own body's emotions. So we might have sort of lost that connection to ourselves. We might be stuck because of fear. So we might be frightened of something happening, and it won't necessarily be a conscious fear. It can be something that perhaps sits in our subconscious and is directing our behaviours, subconsciously without our knowing it. Or we might be stuck because we're focusing on the wrong purpose. So we might be looking to resolve our inner conflict with an outer contextual resolution. Like we might think, when I have that job, when I have that house, when I have that surgery, whatever, then I will be fine. If I can just get this thing out of the way, then I'll be fine. Or we might be stuck because we were never inspired to be free. We might not know what freedom looks like. Sir Ken Robinson writes beautifully about how the education systems in the Western world not only deny our creativity, but they actually send it into remission. And he's done a few books on it. He's also done a TED talk, but one book I've read recently is called The Element, which is a really readable book about the kind of crossover between passion, and he uses the notion of finding your passion actually, which is interesting, from our episode A side. It's about the crossover between the passion that we have for something and our natural kind of talent. So whether we, if we really, really enjoy doing something and we're good at it, where there's a sweet spot in there. And that's quite, it's an interesting book anyway. Okay, but for the purposes of this episode, I'm going to talk about a bit of a low-hanging fruit, really, of those four, which is the most common presentation in the therapy room. I'm going to look at how we might feel stuck because we've stopped being able to trust ourselves. So that first example I gave, really. And how we can't trust ourselves, we can't trust our body's emotions, we can't trust our body's responses, we can't trust how we feel about anything. And so many people come into early therapy sessions and in a worst case scenario, maybe not knowing how they feel or what they want at all. And or they might be a step further on and they might know kind of what it is that they're feeling, but they might believe that it's not valid. And that's a really, really common thing that brings people into therapy. So maybe that relates to you. Is there something that you are feeling, but you don't believe you should be feeling it, or that you're not doing it right, and therapy could definitely help you? And essentially, if we're stuck, then it may be because there's a conflict. People get stuck because there's a conflict between two or more different parts of ourselves. And if there's conflict between two different parts of ourselves, then we feel anxious. That's where anxiety comes from. It comes from that conflict where we feel one thing, we think another, or we feel two separate things that come from two separate parts of ourselves. Or yeah, what we feel conflicts with what we believe. And Werner Erhard said that there are only two things in our lives, and they are aliveness and patterns that block our aliveness. I love that. So when we are what Erhard calls alive, we're noticing then all the little fluctuations in our responses. That is to say, our fluctuations in interest, in repulsion, in attraction, and so on. We're following the sensations in our bodies, and so we're following our aliveness. And we get stuck when we have learned to ignore those signals, or when we've learned that the signals can't be trusted, or if we do trust them, that we will be humiliated or shamed for it. And this happens all the time in our culture. And the messages that we receive are called introjects in the kind of therapy that I practice anyway, and they often teach us to ignore what it is that we feel inside in favour of adhering to the social or cultural norms. And this happens over and over and over again, and we become severed from our true nature because we can't follow those little fluctuations in our body-mind system. So let me illustrate with just a couple of examples about how we are taught to ignore the feelings that we have in our bodies, and maybe you will relate to one or more of these, and they're quite specific, so let's try and kind of make them transferable. But okay, first one, let's start in toddlerhood. Picture a toddler, and on the way to the park, the toddler says, "Can I have an ice cream?" And the parent says, yeah, you can have an ice cream when we get to the park. Toddler gets to the park and gets the promised ice cream, and that toddler, who has so little control over anything in their life, feels absolutely elated. And they're so excited, maybe because they're so excited, they drop the ice cream. And the reaction from the toddler then is one of utter despair. And that despair is real for the child, and it needs validating, say by the parent or whichever adult is with them, but let's say parent. And if the parent could offer something like a validation of that along the lines of, "Oh my love, that's so sad. You've lost your ice cream and you'd waited so long for it. I'd be upset too if I dropped an ice cream," and so on and so on. But it's entirely possible that the toddler gets a response which is a lot more like, "Oh no, never mind, it's only an ice cream. Doesn't deserve all those tears," which is essentially a kind of, "Come on now, don't be silly," sort of comment. And this disregarding of the child's response could come from a multitude of places in the adult. It might come from the adult's need to be in the park with a well-behaved child or a happy child, or maybe they don't want to be seen with a child who's crying because they think it reflects in some way on them. Who knows? And if this event is isolated, then it's probably no biggie, really. But if these kinds of invalidations occur over a period of time or in lots of different ways, then they will have an impact on that person's relationship to their own feelings, on that toddler's relationship to their own feelings. Because the toddler learns, what I feel is wrong. I'm upset about this ice cream. I'm being silly. So the toddler learns, I don't know, maybe I'm dramatic, or I feel too much. And here's another example from slightly later in life. Maybe when you were a teenager, your school life was abysmal. Maybe you were bullied at school, and maybe you cried about it, and maybe you were told by a parent or a teacher don't let them get to you. Sticks and stones will break my bones. Or maybe don't give them another thought. And so when you can't do those things, when you can't just not give them another thought, and when you can't just let these things go, and you can't forget the hurt, then you might learn to believe that you're overreacting, that you're dramatic. Maybe being dramatic is something that you're explicitly accused of being. Again, it's an invalidation. And it is very much a fact of life that we're told we don't really know how we feel. I've tried to pick two small incidental examples there, but many people have been impacted by much more significant experiences, of course, than those simple ones there, although they're much more commonplace. So let's go for a slightly more kind of intense examples. So maybe you were being abused, and because you were so young, you didn't have the language for what was happening to you. So maybe you acted out in another way. Rather than have the adults in your life witness this change in behaviour as something to be curious about, maybe you were told that your behaviour was unacceptable. So maybe you were even punished for it, when actually your behaviour was the most acceptable and predictable expression of what pain and anger and terror that you were feeling and needed to communicate. You were given a completely contrasting message. Okay, I think I've made my point. We are repeatedly given lessons in severing our connections to our own responses. And it's with a view to fitting us into society so that we don't stand out, we don't look like we're too much or not enough. And of course, it's not always a parent. It could be any adult or any peer who's just recycling cultural expectations. Although it's important to note that it is those key attachment relationships that we form sort of through parent or carer and child that hold the most sway. And if you add up all those experiences over a lifetime, you will have disregarded so many tiny and not so tiny messages to do or not do that, to believe that you're worthy or unworthy of any kind of outcome, that you find yourself somewhere that you don't even like or want. And that's what Emily and I were talking about in the first episode in the A-side. That each time we, especially unknowingly, ignore our responses, then we make a turn of 1 degree away from what it is that we want. And if you add these up over a lifetime, then obviously you're lost. So inevitably, we as adults may well find ourselves a little stuck in our careers or in jobs that don't satisfy us, or out of touch or unable to connect with what it is that we want. Never mind how we go about getting it. So what I might want to do in therapy is to listen for or dig for examples or moments where you talk about having feelings, but where you disregard them. So you might say something in passing, such as, my boss said this thing to me and I had a stupid reaction. I must be crazy. Nobody else would respond like I did. I must be broken. So the process of therapy may well be to put you back in touch with what it is that you feel, and then to help you trust those feelings. Because of course, once you hear that duality in yourself, then there's often a reaction to that, negative reaction often. And here's another really important thing that might happen, in my therapy room at least, is that people think they're overreacting to a situation in their present. So if we look at our present situation with aggression or disdain or thinking that we're being silly or over the top, then all we're doing is adding to the pain, because that extra layer of disdain, that extra layer of judgment is causing as much pain as the original thing itself. So if we could examine our reactions with curiosity rather than judgment, if we can allow the feelings to be whatever they are, and if we just gently asked ourselves about the feelings that we're having, the ones that feel so disproportionate, then we might find that they may be disproportionate for the situation that we find ourselves in right there and then in the present, but that those feelings are utterly reasonable for some time in our past and that we haven't really dealt with, and so they're playing out in our present. So we're trying to identify the things that are blocking you being in touch with yourself, because the person who's in touch with themselves is the person who can follow the urges that the body-mind system is giving them. And that's the thing that will lead you towards a truer connection with yourself. And that's the thing that will then enable you to make, in inverted commas, the right decision for you. It's not the right decision based on what you believe society will want from you or what you think you should be doing, but it will be based on that connection to yourself. So a therapist can kind of help you find that part of yourself that's sort of playing out. What's the narrative that you've formed in your head that is leading you to believe that you're not entitled to the feelings that you've got? They will have been implanted somewhere. Okay, so that's a kind of bit of a whistle-stop introduction to that one area that could come up in therapy. And it's so hard to narrow down each episode. It's really hard to pick one thing. I want us all to kind of see if we can see elements of ourselves in some of these examples. And also I want this episode to be quite pithy, quite short and quite punchy so that you can, yeah, get a window anyway. So other episodes of This Won't Fix You will explore some of the issues mentioned in that introduction today in more detail, like I said, for the Four Burners B-side, which looks at the idea of stuckness in relation to past trauma and fear, particularly in more detail. And fear is such an important part to play in all of this. And I almost picked fear to talk about for this episode, but that's, I thought it fit nicely with the Four Burners too. So anyway, if you click follow or subscribe to the podcast, then that episode will be delivered to your feed without you even needing to lift another finger. So go ahead and do that. And before you go, if you are a therapist, or if you just enjoy reading about or listening to this kind of material, then please get in touch via our new Facebook page. Maybe you've already encountered a metaphor or a theory that you like the sound of and you'd just like us to explore it here on the show. Or maybe you'd like to just say hi. Either way, whatever. It would be lovely to hear from you. So until next episode, thanks.